Chapter 2. Arrival of Visitors.
Damn, this coffee is cold. Who was in first today?
What?
Who made the coffee this morning?
I don't know. Oh, wait, Chief's here.
Chief Rether stepped in front.
All right.
It was to get everyone's attention. Mild coughs were scuffled in amongst sliding chairs, and the sounds of people's bodies setting into the boundary between comfort and discomfort that is a poorly crafted metal chair. Chief Rether waited for the room's overall decibel level to drop to an acceptable level to allow his voice to be heard, undistorted, by all present. A woman stood to the side and slightly behind him, rearranging and organizing a few things on the desk at the front of the room.
Good morning. I want to start by addressing the news of today. If I were preaching, you'd be the choir when I say that we are understaffed. Some of you are already aware by now that I've reached out for some help. I don't want any of you to see this as us admitting that we are incapable. We need to resolve things quickly, due to,
Rether cleared his throat,
recent changes in the city, and really, the island as a whole.
Recent changes.
And whispered questions with similarly constructed diction were spoken and responded to with subtle changes of body language throughout the room.
That's why I want to introduce the first of our new additions to the case. She's overqualified for the job, honestly. Having much tougher cases under her belt, she should be able to help us wrap this case up quickly and efficiently. Hasumi Matsumoto actually came in on a boat earlier today. I don't really know how you managed that one.
We disembarked while the storm was still underway, Chief.
Kasumi said while aligning herself with Rether at the front of the room.
I hope each of you is ready to be done with this mess now. I only just arrived today, and I wouldn't mind being done with it, to be honest.
She smirked a little bit as most of the others in the room felt a little more comfortable of her after she said that. Rether continued off of her momentum.
In fact, as we speak, the first passenger ferry of the day should be arriving any minute now, so you all will get a chance to meet a few others.
So, you like my nen, huh?
Zero shook his head.
Well, I should take that as a compliment.
Gorik positioned himself so as not to appear on edge or provoke Zero.
I was raised not to talk to strangers, believe it or not.
My name's Zero.
Any last name? And were your parents fans of numbers by chance?
Just Zero. My parents didn't want to confuse anyone with a multiple-digit name.
Tell them a guy like me appreciates that.
I'll tell them I met someone famous and he liked my name. I'm sure they'd get a kick out of that.
Gorik postulated by the way Zero approached referencing any parents that they must be dead or out of the picture. He now knew, however, that his reputation preceded him.
So how'd you tell it was me, my handsome good looks?
To be completely honest, I read your ticket as it was being punched. No offense, but I never did watch your show.
Gorik sarcastically responded.
Ah, now my feelings are hurt.
It was now clear to him the skill it took Zero to read a ticket from that distance in the short amount of time he was given, especially without any discernible reason to do so. Zero was admiring Gorik's ability to navigate the conversation without giving any ground up. The two managed to remain on the same page and learn from each other without telling each other any accurate info. At this point, Zero wasn't sure to let Gorik know of his tattoo or not. Perhaps someone as traveled as him could have some knowledge as to the tattoo's origin. A girl walked up the stairs. She breezed past them and headed to the railing, away from where the two men were talking. Both Gorik and Zero noticed her, but while Zero was now staring her down, Gorik was still focused on Zero, as he felt that observing him in this new context might reveal an important detail. It wasn't every day a Nen user was encountered in public by chance.
Wow! We must be there already,
she excitedly announced. Gorik could tell. In her excited state, she exerted small traces of aura. He then realized that this island was about to be overcrowded with Nen users. Speed would be the key to reducing casualties in dealing with the newly born criminal element.
Hey there, lady. I've got to say that I don't always see people get this excited over something so small.
Zero was walking towards her slowly while analyzing her aura and behavior.
Well, I don't think it's crazy to be excited to reach your destination. After all, there's nothing quite like reaching your goals. Well, that and a good meal, I'd say. I hear that there are some really delicious beasts roaming around outside the city.
Gorik was staring towards land, taking in the view of Cimeterium in the distance, with the mountain range behind the skyline. Zero was looking the opposite direction, wondering if someone like her would be strong or simply think they were strong.
What's your name?
Candy Rye.
Enthusiastic to be sharing it seemed.
That's a tasty sounding name.
Well, I hope so.
My name is...
Zero. I know. I overheard you two talking. You know, you guys were talking pretty loud up here. I wouldn't be surprised if half of the passengers heard your conversation.
The two men were stunned by this revelation. Either way, Gorik was making sure to memorize both of these people. Cimeterium may be a city, but it isn't so big that you won't come across people like this again. On the shore, Mayor Gray's assistant had just finished putting up a poster on the board nearest the docks. It was an advertisement for the buses heading straight to the city. He smiled as he watched the fishing boat unload a handful of passengers before hopping back into his personal escort vehicle to head back to the city.
What do you mean, help me?
Dahlia asked of Anya as they walked behind Virgil and Maxwell.
You have any money?
Well, I'm actually a hunter, but I don't have a lot of money to spend.
All right, so save that money for a place to stay. In a city like this, you don't want to be adding to the number of homeless. It can be dangerous for a girl.
Virgil and Maxwell had already reached the sign and were reading it.
How is this complimentary? I'm trying to make money, not spend it all.
Maxwell decided it wouldn't be too inconvenient to walk through the village to get to Cimeterium. Maybe he'd be able to find work along the way as well.
It's not like they'd let me on with this anyways.
Virgil referred to his man-catcher, which caught Anya's eye. The two had already moved on before Dahlia and Anya made it to the sign.
Okay, so what do I do?
Worry filled Dahlia's voice.
It looks like there's a bus that comes through here. I'll give you the money for the fare, and then find the closest place to stay at.
I don't know how to repay.
Just let me know if you go off doing anything crazy. I'll be right over to help.
This is what Anya was actually seeking, a dangerous adventure to bring out the more hidden sides of others. It was necessary for her to use as fuel, should she need it. Anya had already changed her sights. She was uninterested in Dahlia's title as a hunter and shifted course. In the daylight, Anya was able to get a clear look at Virgil's weapon, which was masked by the dark of the inside of the boat before. It was an almost nostalgic flash when she saw the man-catcher. Ones like his were used on her as she was raised through constant torture. This, combined with the fact that the most primal fears seemed to perhaps enter him differently than most, meant that seeing his eventual fear would be an enormous tool for Anya. In a sense, he was an outlier that she needed to see for a niche context that would be most useful.
I don't like buses. They always remind me of how easily I could pop the driver's head off by accident.
It was almost as if Dahlia had forgotten she was speaking. Anya turned and looked at her. She began laughing, interjecting words between chuckles.
Well, you don't want to kill the driver while you're the passenger now. The hat's just illogical.
She continued laughing while Dahlia seemed ashamed. An intrusive thought like that almost never is vocalized. She was embarrassed, even though Anya seemed more entertained by this than anything else the two conversed about. Anya's interest in Dahlia was revitalized, but she still felt a sense of camaraderie and a need to protect her, even though they only just met. It must have been their similar ages, she pondered. Xaxa was planning his first actions out for when he'd make it to shore. The paper in his pocket contained a list of the names of each of the members of the missing hunters group, at least the names of those Liban knew of. Three of the members had come to Liban with requests for specific hatsus to be designed. Cowtip Island was home to many opportunities to feast, Xaxa was thinking. Knowing the general layout of the island thanks to Liban, he was planning on heading to the forest, away from the city. Though the city would be his best bet for finding others, he wanted to enjoy his stay by beginning his visit with a meal of magical beasts native to the island. He wanted to see for himself if the reputation was true or not. The boat he was aboard was a trade boat. Cowtip depended on large imports during the narrow period of time when travel could be conducted to the island. Not many boats were making the trip anymore, though, as other trade agreements were forged to keep several companies and local economies afloat during the times when travel could not be made to Cowtip. This, in turn, has left the economy of Cowtip in a downturn. The exports the island was able to make were now being overpassed for similar goods from other locations. It was because of this reason that less boats made travel to the island, and many feared that the city of Cimeterium, a business center in the region, would be abandoned by most of the companies residing there. To keep the island from running low on resources necessary for the city to function as normal, the mayor has resorted to borrowing from nearby areas and has wound up placing the whole of Cowtip in debt to massive banks and predatory governments. To those that knew of the dire situation here, such as Liban, the island seemed to be on its last leg as a business center and would soon be abandoned by most of its civilians. Or so it appeared. Unless a drastic change was made to the workings of the city of Cimeterium, the debt would only grow, and it would only be a matter of time before the lenders came to collect, putting Cowtip in a position where it would not be able to import at all anymore. Sax's boat would be making landfall around sundown, it seemed. Around the time the ferry was docking, Virgil was wandering through the easternmost village outside of Cimeterium. A sign had revealed it was known as Fisher's Paradise, probably because it was home to the shopkeepers who operated the stands bordering the docks and was the village with closest access to the water and the docks, allowing for daily fishing and easy trading during the appropriate times of year. Anya was following behind him, watching him from behind, waiting for what felt like his inevitable jest at the expense of the local villagers. Further behind both of them, Maxwell was going around to the various outdoor groupings of people, asking about work.
If you want work, head back to the dock and ask one of the shopkeepers running the stands.
Luck was apparently not on Maxwell's side so far on his stay in Cowtip. Being a handyman maybe wasn't as effective in a village full of hard workers, so he continued on to Cimeterium with hope of better results. Still, he figured it wouldn't hurt to ask around as he walked, as he'd need some money for a room in the city. It was because of this that his pace was slower than that of Virgil's and by extension, Anya's. Virgil didn't get a chance to amuse himself, as his man-catcher managed to scare off most of the people that saw him coming by. He played with the idea of using his hatsu on someone in the village, but he was too aware of Anya watching him to take any immediate action. The two were both just waiting for either one to do something that would interest them. Maxwell glanced back at the shore in the distance. He noticed the ferry unloading its passengers. In the cargo area of the ferry, a vagabond named Whisk Mented and his dog Shanaga were trying their best to sneak out of the vessel. The fine for stowing away had to be high, he thought. He was lucky enough to find an opening in time to jump out with his dog into the water, while the ferry staff was too busy docking and guiding the passengers out to shore to notice the two. Whisk and Shanaga swam to shore, away from everyone else. As his distaste for large groups of people was keeping him away from the crowd on the dock, he thought it would be best to head to the forest, away from the city. Both of them preferred sleeping outside anyways. The first to officially exit the ferry was a woman named Lahara. She walked right up to the sign and sighed.
I'm here now,
she thought.
It may not be a private escort, but at least I can get to the city quickly.
She was hoping to find someone experienced enough to help her start a business. As Cowtip's businesses would soon be leaving the island, as it was theorized, that means that there would be others with experience who would be displaced. If there was anywhere she would find a valuable partner, she felt it would be here, and that this was the time to look. Gorick was behind her. He was still reading the bus sign greeting newcomers to the island like himself when a squad car pulled up to him.
Gorick Huntsman, I'll give you a straight shot to the city.
It was Chief Rether's most recent local recruit coming to greet the accomplished private investigator Huntsman and give him a free ride to Cimeterium. Rether would have gladly come himself but was stuck on a different errand. Candy was leaving the bus behind. Like Maxwell, she was not too keen on spending money, if avoidable, while her goal was to acquire money, just after her exited a man who was sleeping for the majority of the trip. It wasn't that he was tired, just that he was uninterested with the situation.
Well, hopefully this place will be anything but boring,
he excitedly proclaimed to himself with others in earshot. The man was fairly extroverted, and his actions caught the attention of many others around him, though a certain darkness permeated through his energetic behavior. His name, Cern, and another one-named individual happened to notice more than the others his presence. Zero was shortly behind Cern and felt like he could be the one to keep him from boredom.
Law, what are we supposed to do now?
The man was fidgety.
It's okay. I'm sure we can figure this out.
Law was trying not to speak too loudly. The bar they were at was crowded, even though it wasn't yet dark.
I don't know if it is worth it, but I can't just sit by after that.
Now it's more worth it than ever before.
He was excited more than anything else. This contrasted the other man's fear next to him. A large, muscular woman was leaving the bar. She walked past them, which triggered the two to stop talking and sip their drinks. She'd been drinking, but not so much as to be considered drunk. She stepped outside and almost bumped into Kasumi walking by.
This is why I don't like crowds,
she thought to herself, clinging her book at her side. She had been at the edge of the city reading, waiting for the chief to return with the next recruit for the job. She wondered what he'd really be like. Having seen his show, she assumed much of his personality was for the cameras. On a case like this, there'd be no cameras, and she could see just if his reputation would hold up. Kasumi had an admiration for Gorik, whose track record even a woman like herself could appreciate, with her own track record assuredly impressing him, she thought. On her way back to the station, she passed by one of the empty garages where the gambling ring had been rumored to have operated out of. She stood outside, analyzing the structure. Talking to herself, she muttered,
Should I take a closer look?